Near-death experiences, deja vu, precognition, synchronicities, and so much more. In a moment, Nick Seneca-Jenkel joins us as we go live to Europe to talk about spiritual atheists, the quest to unite science and wisdom into a radical new life philosophy to thrive in the digital age. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Let me tell you about our guest. Nick Seneca-Jenkel is an award-winning thought leader, author, philosopher, professional speaker, transformation catalyst, leadership futurist, and educator. Developed original thinking programs and power tools, and possesses the way of ensuring pioneering organizations, leaders, and people across the planet transforming themselves, their problems, and our world. He's also the co-founder of the Sustainable Innovation, Leadership Development, and Personal Transformation company called Switch On. A couple of his books include Switch On and Spiritual Atheist. Nick, welcome to the program. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, thank you so much. Me too.
How did you get involved in what we would call the phenomena of the supernatural, deja vu, near-death experiences, and things like that, when you seem to have a very practical, somewhat scientific background?
Well, great question. I mean, I noticed myself getting information about the world that I couldn't explain easily from a young age, but I kind of pushed it aside because I was very wedded to a traditional scientific view of the world. But I actually got more and more into it professionally by my work as an innovation consultant and creative consultant for large companies. And anyone who does innovation work, so when I mean innovation, I mean helping companies develop new products, whether a new radio show or a new business or a new digital app or something, you start to get really interested in where do these ideas come from. So you're in a room with 20 people and suddenly you have a breakthrough which makes a sense of everything, and it's kind of working on different levels, and suddenly everyone goes, yes, that seems to be the answer. And then you start to think, well, where does that come from? And anyone who does that kind of work long enough, whether you're an artist as in a painter or a sculptor, or an artist in business, you start to get very curious about the source of creativity. And that's sort of the big sort of stepping point for me. But there were other breadcrumbs along the way, strange, what Jung would call synchronicities, strange, meaningful correspondences that I only realized were breadcrumbs when I looked back and went, ah, I was being given breadcrumbs to follow the whole journey.
And when you started probing this, when did you begin to realize there's something to this, that maybe near-death experiences are happening? Maybe there is deja vu. Maybe there is precognition.
Well, it was kind of a long journey because I had to first challenge my own core philosophy, which, as anyone's ever tried to do that, is actually quite difficult to do because we don't believe it's a philosophy. We believe it's just the truth. So if you just don't believe anything other than what science can tell you, then you don't even believe that's a set of assumptions or an ideology. But luckily, I studied philosophy of science during my science training. And that discipline teaches you that science doesn't progress within one paradigm. It progresses through different paradigms, as in different ways of thinking about what the scientific data is telling you. And so I started to question my professional / philosophical assumptions, but I was also going through my own personal breakdowns and burnouts at the same time, which I believe are also part of the way what I would call the universe helps you rethink yourself, is to give you really difficult personal situations. And between the two of those personal situations and what I was doing to heal myself and my own professional and philosophical thinking, somehow within that a few years an alchemy occurred, and then I had a profound transformation in both myself as a person and my role in the world as a thinker and doer. And then from that, lots of stuff came very quickly, philosophically, emotionally, in my personal life, in my corporate life, that made stuff to make sense of it all.
Tell me about the title Spiritual Atheist.
It wasn't the first title for the book, but it seemed to really capture people's interests. It's like, huh, how does that work? So Spiritual Atheist is a a philosophical memoir, I call it, of my life from about the age of 15, when I became an old-fashioned, hardcore, scientific atheist. Actually, during a sermon I was asked to give as a 15-year-old in a synagogue. And it includes up to my journey and sort of my breakthrough out of atheism into what I now call spiritual atheism. And so spiritual atheist is a way of saying that I believe there's a philosophy that anyone can have that allows for both a real belief in science as a great way of understanding the world we see outside us, and spirituality is a great way or the best way of understanding what happens inside us, and I mean by that spiritual practice, meditation, et cetera, and that you can bring those two together within us. And not just that, it even goes further to say, until we bring those two together, the spiritual and the atheistic, the science and the consciousness, the mind and the matter, until we bring them together, we can't fully thrive either in our own lives or in our lives as professionals and leaders. And that's really the rub, is that we need science, but we also need the study of consciousness internally together to understand the one universe that we're part of.
Can you be an atheist and believe in the supernatural?
It depends what you mean by believe in the supernatural. And the word supernatural I find interesting as well. Because I've definitely experienced a whole range of synchronicities, deja vus, information coming to me that I shouldn't be able to know. And for me, that's a sort of lived fact. Then you can go into science and go, well, there's actually many, many cases now documented of all sorts of uncanny experiences. So that's scientific fact. But my philosophy that I put into this book, it says, well, do we have to believe that somehow supernatural, or maybe that's just how nature is? Maybe nature has a connectivity within consciousness that is different from the way that we see connectivity happen in matter, like in balls touching each other in traditional scientific materialism. And so maybe we don't have to even think about the supernatural at all, which as a natural skeptic gets my, raises my hackles. You know, is there sort of, you know, magic and darkness and all these sort of things. But if you go, well, hold on a minute, if consciousness is separate from matter but still always connected to it, and that we know consciousness seems to have a fluidity of it, and we seem to be able to pick up on other people's consciousness, but also consciousness in different times of future and past, maybe that's the interior connectivity that science will never be able to fully understand from its world, but it can certainly understand where it happens, and it can take a create evidence of where these things happen. And so maybe we don't have to think of it as supernatural. Maybe that's just what nature does. Nature is connected in our interior mind, in our hearts and minds, in a way that you can't see in a microscope.
Do you have any doubts at all that the topics that we're going to talk about tonight exist? Have you concluded now that this is all real?
I do have doubts that some of the things purported to be super psi phenomena might exist, because I think it's very easy to go from what I would call a fairly well thought empirical experience, like a near-death experience. Absolutely, we've seen them occur. We can model them. You know, we can take records of them, and then it's but a hop, skip, and a jump to then a kind of a worldview that I think distorts those experiences into a different way. So I think there's a very fine line between what I would call a sort of naturalist or a expanded sense of nature. So picking up on past experiences seems to me absolutely plausible. Picking up on the future in the moment seems absolutely plausible to me. But I believe I believe the system is designed to help us rather than for it to be used to serve us in a sense. So for me, it's like, ask not what you can do with super psi abilities, but ask what super psi abilities can help you do to serve the world. And as soon as we get into people trying to leverage these powers for sort of magic and power over people, I think we've lost the path. And that's a really important distinction.
Tell me about your thoughts on deja vu and how this fits into it, Nick. Some psychiatrists will say that deja vu may be a medical situation, a temporal lobe epilepsy.
But those same psychiatrists, I was a medic on the path of being a psychiatrist.
Aha, uh-huh, okay.
I came out of that worldview. I mean, some psychiatrists in the 70s and 80s were still claiming that that yoga and the states you can access through yoga were psychotic states. So we've got to always remember that there is a way of speaking about all of these experiences, including the experience that I've had regularly of being at one with my universe, you know, the experience of spiritual enlightenment. There's a way of dismissing all of it by saying it's just an exotic brain state. In fact, not just that, it's a psychotic brain state and there's something wrong with you if you experience these things, including, you know, the dream states we all go in and out of every night and every morning. So there is that's a way that scientists like to diminish people who study consciousness by saying, basically, you're nuts.
You're nuts, or there's a medical issue or something
exactly.
like that.
I mean, exactly. And there probably can be. There's probably a fine line between someone who spends a lot of time in these states who then loses the ability to function in this world, in the material world, very easily. And I know people who are they hang out a lot in the, you know, in the dreamlands of various different ways. And they do find it hard to live in this land. And there may be a way that suddenly becomes over the threshold of something we call a disease. And there's now some research that shows that people who hang out, who are very imaginative and very creative and access that part of their brain and that part of consciousness, in a very extreme sense, that is psychosis. That then brings up a really interesting idea of what does psychosis really mean? Is it actually wrong or bad, or is it just a very extreme state that we can all get to, and those people find it hard to come back into this world?
Is there a God factor in any of this, Nick?
Well, there is and there isn't. So for me, God, in the spiritual atheist philosophy or worldview, God is the living, dynamic, adaptive system of intelligence and complexity that is we are all part of in every moment inherently. And this is the important bit, that can guide our action in the moment by giving us information, whether through deja vu or synchronicity or any of these other forms that can help us move ourselves towards a state of thriving if we can spot the signals. And that includes deja vu. That includes, possibly may include, you know, information from dreams.
Sure.
The universe saying, here, pay attention to this today.
Many scientists will say that all these things we are talking about are the basis of the brain. And I'm not talking about medical conditions. They're simply saying that the brain functions where all these things emanate from. I tend to differ that. What do you think?
Yes. I mean, I also don't agree with that. I definitely believe that the brain states correlate powerfully with our experiences in consciousness. So if we are having a full ecstatic experience in the middle of a five rhythms dance floor and we're feeling liquid light rushing through our body, I'm pretty sure if you put us in the fMRI scanner, you'll see all sorts of interesting things lighting up in our brain and right down through our brainstem into our nervous system and our guts and probably our heart too.
Well, what does this tell you, though? If this acts outside of the brain, if it has nothing to do with the physical body, then there's something very, very wonderful that's out there in the universe that is driving these things.
Well, exactly. And so this is where you get into different models of what we actually believe consciousness is. I mean, ultimately, it always comes down to what do we believe consciousness is, as in the experience you have right now of listening to this show and the thoughts and feelings you get from it, this is consciousness. What is it? And if you believe it's just nerves firing, then there is no room for any of these other experiences. But there's also no room for the placebo effect. There's no room for you helping your own healing. There's not really any room for free will either, which we all know sounds crazy. So then you have to move to a different model of consciousness. And I subscribe to what William James, the great psychologist, called the transmission model, where the brain picks up consciousness and has access to the great mind, the great consciousness, and it definitely does stuff to change that enormity of full consciousness into something we understand. So you need the brain. You can't have consciousness, or you can't have human consciousness without the brain, but consciousness must therefore exist outside of the brain as well, which means it has to exist in this phone receiver I'm holding, the rock I can see over there, which then enters into a very different philosophy of life than the one that most scientists subscribe to, which is called materialism, because the materialist sees the universe as dead. There is no consciousness outside of a human brain. And if you believe consciousness exists alongside the brain, then you have to then realize that the consciousness has to exist everywhere, in everything.
Exactly.
To some degree.
Nick Jenkel with us. He's a noted author and futurist, spiritual atheist. One of his books, including Switch On, his website, switchonnow.com, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. What could you tell us, Nick, in terms of a story where this convinced you that these are the real things?
So many. I mean, basically, every time I close my eyes and meditate, I get all sorts of information and experiences that the materialist science worldview says shouldn't happen, can't happen, or are rubbish.
But it does happen.
So I'll give you a little example from a moment of my life. It sounds tiny, but it's very big for me. I was in Mexico, and I was in one of, you know, the area, the Mayan area of Mexico.
Okay. Cancun, that area?
Yeah, south of Cancun, near one of the temples.
Yeah.
Beautiful temples, very interesting place, part of the world. And in fact, here's even one thing. There are some places of the world that seem to have a higher degree of connection to this interior consciousness than others. And this is one of those places. But so are places like Goa in India, so are places like Ibiza in Spain. They seem to connect very deeply to this other consciousness experience. So this is what, that's already one of them. So I was already there for that reason. And I went into a store, and this homeless guy, or seemed like a homeless guy, outside the store, looked at me as I walked in, and I just went in to buy some, I don't know, bread, something very mundane. And as I came out, he handed me a piece of paper, and it said, I opened it on the way back to the shack where I was staying with my friends. I was 20 at the time. You know, it was like hammock.
I'm just a kid.
Shacks.
Yeah.
I was a kid. But I was a kid who was studying medicine, and I was already questioning medicine. Like, I was already, like, feeling the tension of this within me, like this broken heart that from discounting my heart. And I opened this piece of paper from this guy that I didn't even speak to. No communication occurred. And it said, Erez El Mago, you are the magician.
Huh.
And I'm like, what on earth is that? And now, with the brilliant help of 2020 hindsight, I realized that was one of these meaningful correspondences that Jung talks about. These synchronicities, these breadcrumbs that the universe gives you to change path. Because it wasn't long after that I left medical school, about 6 months later.
He knew somehow. Maybe he was sent to do this to you. Stay with us, Nick. We got a quick break, but we'll be back with more, and then we'll take phone calls next hour here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're back with Nick Jenkel, and when we take calls next hour, if you have had near-death experiences, deja vu experiences, precognition, synchronicities, share those stories with us. I'd really like to hear what those are. And Nick, in terms of what we've been talking about, which most people would call supernatural, it could be just very natural, right?
Right. It could be the way that the universe has to guide us to do what it thinks needs to happen next to help someone else heal, transform, ourselves heal and transform. It's just the way it is. And we need to listen to that information because it's what guides us way more powerfully than our own monkey mind with all its concerns and worries every day.
And what's so amazing, too, is so many cultures share the same experiences, even though they may be thousands and thousands of miles apart. It seems that, you know, like African tribes, shamans, psychics, everybody seems to have experienced the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I've lived in an African village, and this kind of stuff is interesting because it doesn't get pushed into a box called supernatural, because we only think of things as supernatural because we've had 300 or 400 years of scientific dogma and ideology being thrust upon us. So now we have to go, well, that stuff is like somehow weird, and uncanny is the word that Einstein used. Spooky action, he called it, which is interesting. But if you actually accept, as I do, that science is the best way of understanding what we can see with our eyes through a microscope or a telescope, brilliant, but science was never designed to understand the amazing, rich experiences of consciousness that we have, and I include what my people might call altered states of consciousness, including near-death experiences, past life memories, some kind of precognition or future insights that we shouldn't be able to have. That's not the domain of science, and science may never be able to prove to us that those things are really real. So we have to be able to accept that that is just how nature might have it, that we are connected, and that connection comes to us in the form of all these uncanny phenomena. But the key thing is, so my wife and I are co-partners of our business. We run workshops together. We write our methodology. We develop our methodology for transformation together. So she believes in spirit guides and talks to her spirit guides. I don't go that far, personally, to think of them as entities. It doesn't make sense to me so much. But what we agree...
That's the atheist in you, right?
Exactly. But what we have agreed, and this is after hundreds of hours of talking about it and discerning it and defining, you know, really getting nitty-gritty, it doesn't matter if you believe it's a past life that you actually lived or you picking up on some kind of past information. What matters is you learn how to listen to it, discern what the message is, and act on that message. So if I use the word intuition in my language and she uses the word her spirit guide, it doesn't really matter. What matters is this is information. It's important information for a thriving life. So learn to listen.
Nick, what does precognition mean to you?
So precognition is technically any form of information about something that's about to happen that you have, that through the laws of traditional science, physics, you shouldn't have any information about what happens next, basically. Point out in the book, there are a number of studies, scientific studies, that show a better than chance likelihood that precognition is possible, which has caused a lot of controversy. One of them came out from Cornell University, you know, a top Ivy League university. You know, hundreds of pages of social media attacks on the author of it from angry ideological scientists. Mm-hmm. But precognition for me is what I believe the human being is best at in the animal kingdom is having some information from the future come into the present. And I would argue that all breakthrough creatives, whatever industry or type, whether it's Van Gogh bringing in a new form of art, or whether it's new forms of music, or whether it's new business ideas, to some degree, that is because some people are able to channel the future into the present more than others. But we can all work on that skill, because what we seem to be doing is we seem to be bringing futureness into the now when we create something, a breakthrough, in any form. And that is fundamentally fascinating to me.
Nick, I do not believe in coincidences. I think everything is done for a reason. Fate takes over in many cases, but I don't believe that things just happen.
Mm.
Thoughts?
Yes. I mean, one of our sort of catchphrases for our workshops is everything may not happen for a reason that we can understand, but everything that happens can be used for a reason, which is our own thriving and the thriving of our loved ones. So it's a slightly different discernment. I don't know if our little minds can fully appreciate the full reasons for things to occur. For example, the death of our child. But everything that happens can be used in our lives to become more powerful, transformational agents of goodness, of love, of commitment, of purpose. And it's a really important thing. So in my analogy, in my book, I use the idea of a symphony. So the universe is a symphony, and we're just a flute or a violin or a cello. we don't understand the whole symphony. We don't understand what's going on all the time and all the different bits of music. All we have to do is become really good at our instrument and follow the guidance of the orchestra, to flow into the orchestra. And part of that guidance comes in the form of these coincidences. These coincidences were so powerful, that Jung ended up teaming up with, Carl Jung is the guy who sort of brought out the idea of the collective unconscious and archetypes and all that kind of idea. Amazing psychotherapist and psychologist. And he teamed up with one of the leading quantum physicists of his age, Wolfgang Pauli, and they put together an entire paper on coincidences, because they saw them as being one of the places where consciousness sort of breaks into the material world and shows us that there's a connection and shows us signs, signals. And what I've noticed in my life is, as I've purified my own inner world, freeing myself from trauma and pain and suffering and old thoughts and old patterns, which is a really important part of this conversation, I see more and more coincidences happen. You know, every day I'm getting guidance. Oh, isn't that weird? So even yesterday I was with my wife. We just had a moment of intimacy, and we were working on building a school. And literally I said to her, I think we should do this. And she said, I just had that thought.
Right, or you're thinking about somebody and they call you on the telephone.
Happens all the time. I mean, I work in the real world. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm about to email a client or a podcast or whatever. I check in with myself. Is now the moment to send this message to this person? Are they open and available? And if it isn't, doesn't matter what my plan is, I let go of my plan and serve my intuition. And it works. You know, if I think of a client in my head, suddenly it pops into my head, I like think, okay, I need to communicate with them for some reason.
Yep. No, it does work. It works in a remarkable way.
It really does.
And again, I think the complexity of the universe will tell us that this was all created and developed and is a very important aspect of the universe.
Oh, absolutely. So I actually believe, and this is definitely going into the world of speculation and conjecture, that the evolution story, which is very powerful, and I absolutely believe that we have natural selection and gradual change. But I think the evolution story is going to go through its own transformation in the way that physics went from classical physics, Newtonian physics, to quantum physics. Because evolution tells a story about survival, and that clearly goes on. You know, we clearly do want to survive and compete with each other. But it doesn't tell the story of what I think is the second aspect of reality, which I think of as thriving. So you have surviving and thriving. The evolution story of Darwin does the surviving, but I believe there's some other forms of change and development, which I would call happening in consciousness, which help us thrive. And that's where these experiences happen, these extraordinary phenomena, these altered states, which, you know, can be as mundane as a daydream moment, where you have a daydream in the middle of a workshop,
Yeah. Maybe
not one of mine, and that helps us thrive. And there may even be, this is my sense, that in our genetic, as our genes change and get reproduced, people talk about mutation, right? It's just random things occur and we develop a little bit of an ear and that somehow gets selected. But I've got the feeling that some kind of quantum consciousness event can occur in our genes, which creates some form of adaptation, which then helps us become more complex and thrive as an organism, as a species. So you've still got classical science working with evolution, but then you also have this uncanniness entering into our creativity at the mutation level, which brings out more highly evolved genetic structures, which then natural selection can select the ones that work.
And how can you explain this? It happens. We know it happens. But why?
This is really ultimately why we... So I wrote this book, Spiritual Atheist, because of that question. So you can be interested in this stuff. You can read some books on this stuff. But until you understand why in your own mind, as a daily understanding of life, I don't think you can fully use these experiences in the way they're meant to be used. And that's what I call having a life philosophy. And so for me, the life philosophy that I subscribe to has us part of a one universe, one non-dual experience where everything is connected. And this living dynamic system, which the sci-fi author Philip K. Dick called VALIS, Vast Active Living Intelligence System. Some people call it God. It wants us to thrive. It wants us to grow. It wants us to expand, both in terms of our complexity as an organism, biologically, but also our complexity of consciousness. It is seeking growth. It's like it's just the way it is. It's like a child seeks growth, right? It seeks new experiences.
Yeah.
It's just the way the universe the universe is alive from one lens, from the consciousness lens. The universe is alive, and it wants to grow. It wants to be complex. But most importantly is it wants thriving. It wants the experience of flourishing in its systems at all times. And that's just the way it is. It's just built into the design of the whole thing.
Nick, do you think successful people possess the abilities of precognition and things like that?
As a philosopher, I will just look for a moment on the word success. So it depends what you mean by success. When I was 29, I had a company with 50 staff, and I was flying all over the world doing crazy consulting for huge companies. I was wealthy. I was multi-millionaire on paper. I was successful in every possible way in the material world. But my inner life was crumbling. I was in agony. My relationships were failing. I was a bad boss. I was in existential angst. So if you call that success, then no, not necessarily.
Success is in the eyes of the beholder, I guess.
Exactly. If you say thriving, as in this Greek idea of eudaimonia, of which literally means having friendly demons within, friendly spirits within, the thriving people have this capacity, I would say yes, because we can't thrive unless we take note of this information, this guidance that we're getting, because it's beyond our analytical mind. It comes from a different place, and it's not available to the analytical mind. So we have analytical thinking always available to us, great memories and data, and then we have this other form of information and awareness, and we need to bring them both together. We need to look at data, evidence, science, but we also need access to this other flow of goodness in order to thrive. So yes, people who really are thriving have found ways. Maybe they don't know it's the precognition or synchronicity finding, but they have found ways to follow the breadcrumbs that the complex living universe has put there for us. And it may not just be for our help. You know that guy I talked to you about, the guy outside the bodega in Mexico? He was guided to support me in my journey. So a lot of our guidance is not about us. It's about who we're supporting in their journeys. And that's some form of, I guess, shamanism, coaching, whatever you want to call it. Medium, being a medium, whatever. We're there to serve others as much as we are ourselves.
I wonder how many of those little notes he gave out that day, or whether it was just you.
So there you go. The scientist, skeptic, would say, well, he just gives 100 notes a day, and some of them hit.
Right.
Randomly. I don't like to think that. I just think I'm special, as we all do.
Well, you know what? You never know. The guy could have been an angel sent down from heaven.
Yes, exactly. And the thing is, for me, is I'm still a skeptic. I'm still, as you say, I have an atheist in me. Part of my life is to question a lot of these phenomena. But a true scientist doesn't have any ideology and is always looking for the evidence, for empiricism. And so that all these things are possible. There's no more. It's no more crazy story to say that the universe is alive and wants us to have complexity and thriving than it is to say the universe is dead and has no intelligence, no wisdom, and nothing moving in it, nothing changing. Particularly when we see life in every flower we see, every plant, we see something magical. There's magic in every, photosynthesis is magic. It takes the energy from the sun and turns it into green plant material. I mean, if that's not magic, what is magic?
And I think the human being has the ability to create this aura of precognition or just about anything else, just with mind power?
For me, mind power is consciousness. So we have these dreams, we have material power, and we have this mind power, and we can learn to develop our mind power, essentially.
Stay with us, Nick. We're going to take a break, but we're going to come back and chat more with you about your latest work, Spiritual Atheist, and we'll take phone calls and definitely share with us your deja vu stories, precognition, afterlife stories. We'll take them, too.